What do you think is probably the biggest influence your dad had on the way that you parent Vivi today?
The way that I parent my daughter is not like my father.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's because of like me, or do you think
I think that's because of you and the expectations of fathers today?
Interesting.
There's a whole different level of involvement that I can't just go to work for 8-10 hours a day and leave you to be the sole parent. It's not even like a question at this point, but it was the norm then.
Right.
So.
Hello to all of our exhausted and exhilarated working parents, and welcome to The Tightrope, a show about balancing career, motherhood, and everything in between. We are hosts, Jess Feltz and Daniela Cornu, and this week we're going to be continuing our conversation with our partners and friends who are fathers, and we're going to be talking about what it means to be a modern millennial father. Let's get into it. All right, so here we go with our second podcast with our partners and our friends who are fathers. Jess, what is the difference between this week's podcast versus our podcast that we did the last time with our dads? What's kind of the line of questioning and how are we elevating this discussion?
Yeah. I think in our first episode, we gave our dads a layup, if you will. We really just allowed them to talk about their experiences with fatherhood, and especially those newborn years, right? And listening to the dads together commiserate and share funny stories, and just being able to listen through those first couple of months of what it's like to be a father in that transition. That was really what we were capturing in the first episode. And today's episode, we're going to dive even deeper to that. We really want to hear our dads share about what they see as the evolution of fatherhood and how does their fatherhood today perhaps differ from the fatherhood that they grew up with their dads or those they saw around them. And so we're talking a little bit more broadly about fatherhood and society today versus the last episode was really more about their personal experiences.
Awesome. Yeah, I am excited to let our listeners kind of hear some of the things that they have to say. So I'm going to jump us right over into it and we can hear it from them.
Great. Welcome back, everyone. We are here for round two of our panel with our dads today. We're really excited to finish off these two episodes here where we invited some of our favorite dads to talk about modern fatherhood. So just to remind you today, we have Ryan, George, and Nate, along with Danny and myself here today. And in our first episode, we really focused our conversation on the introduction to fatherhood. We had each of our dads go across and tell their story. What was their first, oh shit moment? I'm a dad. And what did those really early years of fatherhood, that newborn stage, look like for each one of them? And today we're really going to focus our conversation on modern fatherhood. I think we can all agree that there are some different expectations today for dads than there were in past generations. And so we're really going to dive into that and talk about, you know, what does modern fatherhood look like today from the perspective of our three dads that we have here? Talk a little bit about their influences on fatherhood and also what they see going on in society today. So dads, I want to welcome you all back.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Thanks for having us. Exciting.
Yeah. So our first question that we are going to get started with today, and like we did last time, just, you know, feel free to jump in. And I'll make sure we try and hear from everyone here. But the first question that I want to start with today is really starting to talk about your own fathers. We're really kind of going to jump right in because as we're talking about modern fatherhood, you all have a vision of what fatherhood looked like, either from your own fathers or fathers that you experienced growing up or just kind of society. And so I'm really curious to know, how did the fathers that you saw growing up kind of influence your life and what you see as fatherhood today?
Wonderful. Who's going to take the first stab?
Let's hear from me first, because I obviously know your father. And so it's been really interesting from my perspective, because obviously, like, I think what makes being married really interesting sometimes is that I have my expectations of fatherhood based on my experiences. And then to get to meet your dad and really see a completely different family dynamic and the way that your family rallies around your dad is a really awesome thing to watch. So I'd love to hear what your perspective is and share that.
Yeah. I mean, he's like it's the most traditional father that you could ever have and the most traditional family structure, I feel like, for that generation for sure. And he's kind of on the older end of that generation. He turns 79, 80 this year, I think.
That's crazy.
So, you know, he's up there in age, but you know, it was a very traditional upbringing.
Nate, can you tell me what you mean when you say traditional?
Dad worked, mom stayed home with the kids. Dad made the money, mom took care of the kids and cooked for everybody and cleaned the house, and that was that. You know, she worked a bit on the side and you know, had her own projects and passion things that she was able to do, but dad was gone all day, went to work, made the money, came home, and dinner was ready for him on the table, and the kids were all, you know, kind of answering to him when he got home. You know, he did take on that role of getting home and taking the kids from mom for a couple hours. Like, he did step in and do that. But, you know, it was just a very Norman Rockwell, like, town that we grew up in. And it was just, like, very traditional in that sense, like, the way that the family dynamic was laid out and what the expectation was.
It's so Norman Rockwell. Like, literally the first time that Nate took me home, I was like, is this a Norman Rockwell painting? It's very, like, whereas, like, my family's chaos and a little bit dysfunction in the best possible way. Like, Nate's family is, like, hyper-functional and very, like, mm-hmm. It's picturesque. It's crazy to, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, as a father of six boys, my dad was the authoritarian for sure, was able to lay the smack down and make sure that we were in our place. But he didn't have the look like mom did. She was able to put us in our place with just a look. you know, he was very much holler and scream at you to get his way and make sure that you were listening, you know, listening to him and abiding by the rules. But, you know, an amazing father for sure. You know, I have so much respect for the man, and he's taught us all as men so much about, like, how to be a respectful human being and so much about work ethic and taking pride in yourself and your life. So, you know, he's really assumed an amazing role as a father. Now, it's not without its caveats. It's like, you know, we have inherited some things from dad that probably are frowned upon in this day and age.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is probably the biggest influence your dad had on the way that you parent Vivi today?
The way that I parent my daughter is not like my father.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's because of, like, me, or do you think
I think that's because of you and the expectations of fathers today?
Interesting.
There's a whole different level of involvement that I can't just go to work for 8-10 hours a day and leave you to be the sole parent. It's not even like a question at this point, but it was the norm then.
Right.
So it's completely different.
So I actually want to jump to Ryan next if we can, because I love what you say. Well, I mean, it's true, right? That was the norm. However, Ryan's experience with his dad, again, Ryan's my husband, I know his family extremely well, is completely the opposite.
And I had the pleasure of meeting your dad. I think I've met him twice now.
Yes, but just this last week.
But this last week was the most recent time. And I've met your mom a couple of times too. And I just, they're fabulous. It's so funny.
Yeah. So Ryan, why don't you explain a little bit about your experience growing up? Because there were some, obviously, some external factors that played into that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's crazy hearing that story. It's almost the exact opposite for me. So, first of all, I was born in South Africa, and we emigrated here when I was 6 years old. And at the time, it was my mom's work that got us the entrance to the country. So kind of by protocol, she took the lead for a while and was the only person that could work, but that just played what was already set up in our home in South Africa, where she was the breadwinner. She had the career. She was in a creative field, but absolutely the hardworking one, nine to five or nine to whatever. Some days I wouldn't even see her, is what I was told when I was young. So yeah, she was absolutely the breadwinner growing up. And then we moved here and it was the same. I mean, my dad is a very free-spirited person. Was part of some hippie-type movements in the 60s. If anyone has ever seen the movie Big Fish, I like literally think my dad is Big Fish in that sense, and I'm kind of the son, and we have our things to work on a little bit. But no, he's a larger-than-life character in that way, and you know, he was very involved with the kids. I mean, that's like putting it lightly. Like, kids are his life, what lights him up. And now it's really fun to see with the grandkids. The same thing is happening, even though he's 30 years older. He has more energy than I do, which is crazy. But no, so like growing up, you know, he was the fun, absolutely the fun. But he also was...
How old is your dad, really quickly?
He's 71.
Okay. So a little bit of a different generation, slightly younger. I think that's important to like think about the different generational things.
Yeah, so a little younger. But I think at the time, it's still pretty uncommon, early 90s in the U.S. even.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, so like I remember him like always having fun with us and doing games. And just he was always so involved. Like he always said, get stuck in, you know, he never had to like worry about splitting his attention. Like it was there. But he also was a huge disciplinarian. You talk about the look, right? Like maybe your mom had the look. My dad had a look. And if he had that look, you are in deep trouble. And he would yell and shout a little bit. And if that happened, like it was so loud that you literally just like had to stop. It was just like, you know.
God.
So my mom was more lenient, I think, because she was away all the time. She felt guilty and then would come. And the best thing I remember from my mom growing up was like she wasn't around as much. When she was there, she would just be like, you know, walking on her lap and she'd be playing with my hair. It was like just very affectionate. And I would go to her knowing like if I needed like to do something kind of you know, like I needed money or I needed something that was risky, I would go to her because she, I think, was like wanting to make up for some of that. So yeah, kind of the opposite.
The early mom guilt.
I was going to say, I'm like, mom, oh my God, we have like to have these moms
35 years ago.
It's crazy.
I think mom guilt probably goes back more than 35 years.
So Ryan, what do you think the influence of kind of the reverse, right? You had a stay-at-home dad for a while and then he went to work later when he could, but like very still involved. How do you think that influenced the way that you show up today as a father?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because like I'm a very different person than my dad in many different ways, and I'm pretty career oriented. I get that, I think, from my mom and my mom's dad, actually. So watching my dad is actually helping me get out of, not that I'm like a traditionalist or like think of myself that way. I just know that like I'm currently like more of the career focused person, bringing home the bacon, as they say. But watching my dad, it taught me the presence you want to have, and just honestly the joy that you can have from hanging out with kids. Like everyone's like, oh, they're a pain in the butt and they keep their nagging and go away. But no, he's like, if you actually just like look at them, engage with them, get curious, play their games, because he was never shy or embarrassed to do that, even in public. I mean, he embarrassed me a little bit sometimes. So I was like, okay, like to be a man isn't just to be the tough guy with the newspaper and kids going away. It's like, no, actually to lean into it. So I feel like I strike a good balance with that. I know I can get frustrated with myself if I know I'm not engaging with the kids because I'm stressed about work or I'm thinking about it. I can like sense when that happens. And I don't think my dad ever had that, because he was just like, I wake up in the morning and this is my purpose. And it's part of my purpose, but it's not my only purpose, especially right now given our dynamic. So I often have to try to like, I do have to turn it on, or more like turn everything else off. But when I do, it's usually a great experience.
I'd love to come back around to that, like being able to turn it on and turn it off and compartmentalize, because I think that that's something that's so challenging, regardless of if you're a mom or a dad, if you're working, how to do that, I think, is fascinating.
Yeah. So George, I'm going to jump to you now, though. How do you relate to hearing these two different things and your experience? Yeah, right. Like we have a little bit of two extremes here.
Well, my dad's younger, to give you a little bit of a profile. He's only 60. He had me when I was 9. He was 19 when he had me. I was already the second kid. He's what you call an illegal, right? He crossed over from Mexico when his parents died. So he had a grocery store. His parents had a grocery store in Durango, Mexico. And his parents died when he was about 15, 16. So one of his oldest sisters is the first to immigrate here, and he basically got paid for it to come over. And so what's funny is, like, you know, I was just telling the guys how, you know, being in Mexico City with my father, it's kind of surreal for me because, you know, I think I appreciate him and his story a lot more now as an adult, as a parent, than I did as a kid. Because I worked for my dad since I was 12. He had a grocery store. He's an entrepreneur. So he took his, you know, the way that I see my father now versus the way I saw him then, he was very authoritative, like you had to mention, like you guys mentioned. Like, he worked at a factory. He'd come home. You would not be able to talk to him for 2 hours. And then between like the hours of 7 and 9, you might be able to get a football thrown at you, depending on the mood that he was in. But like, he did everything. I remember, you know, we grew up pretty humbly in the south side of Chicago. And I remember, you know, having everything, having the basketball hoop set up in the backyard, having bicycles, having things that I always wanted in terms of, I never went wanting. He was... and you know, to be honest with you, I think knowing what I know now, spanking was a lot less frowned upon back then than it is
much more socially acceptable.
And sometimes I'm like, huh, well, maybe that's not such a bad idea. But you know, he was one of those guys where you always got whatever was on his mind, you're going to get. He wasn't going to beat around the bush to anyone, much less his kids. There was four of us. I was the only son, three sisters. And, you know, what I really find interesting is that I don't think I realized how much patience he had, knowing what I know now. Because, let's just say I was maybe not the best son. Growing up, crashed four of his cars before I turned 18.
Four.
Yeah.
I got like, surprised me.
I got like 3 speeding tickets in my first year. That was a bad kid.
Well, I was also driving to work for 2 of those, which he owned the shop, so he couldn't really say much about that one. But no, I think that, you know, what it's taught me now is that I really, to your points about hats, you know, that time and that place of him not having a father figure to base off, like when I was in Mexico City, I'm using the internet to get me through parenting situations. Like, what do you do? Like, you know, you didn't have that back then. You had to make it up on your own. And the fact that he was able to do that with 4 kids before he turned 25 is amazing.
Nope. Don't hand me 4 kids before the age of 25. No thanks. So one thing I'm curious about, because Nate, you brought this up specifically when you were talking about it, how you see your parenting is different now because the expectations are different now. And so there was the Pew Research Center, and this statistic is probably old. It's from 2011, but it's the most recent I could find. Shows that fathers have nearly tripled the amount of time that they spend with their kids today than they did back in 1965.
Okay.
So I'm curious, what do you think of this idea that fatherhood is a much more kind of an engaged sport than today than it used to be in the past? And kind of what do you see as the impact of this on kind of your families, right? Because it's not just a dynamic between you and a child, but really it's a family dynamic.
I mean, to call it a sport is just completely off base. I mean, this is our lives, and, you know, I think that in our generation, there is a huge push for feminism and for advancement of women in the workplace, and everybody striving to get women equality in the workplace and the same opportunities and the same pay. And, you know, it's just a completely different dynamic. And as a result, you know, the expectation is that the fathers are there to co-parent. You are expected to contribute just as much to that family as your wife or as your female partner, you know, whatever. But I think that, I mean, that's just a huge driving factor in what we're trying to achieve at this point. And so as a family, yeah, we are constantly striving for co-parenting 50% contribution to the family.
Yeah. And or equity, right? We talk a lot about this where it's like, I talk a lot about this with my girlfriends, where it's like, you taught me this, Jess, is that it's, you can't have equality. There's no such thing as equality. There is no such thing as 50-50 all the time. That's impossible. You're going to make yourself crazy going after that. But just having equity in our household where we are supporting each other depending on what our weeks look like. You know, so having those conversations like, this week I have this on my plate. Okay, this week I have this on my plate. How do we show up together? And I think the fact that you buy into that.
How do I support you
right
when you're in it? How do you support me when I'm in it? How do we support each other when Vivi's a disaster?
It's been a rough couple of weeks, guys.
Right. Well, and I think there's a key phrase that you just used, Danny, which is like, Nate has to buy into that too, right? Because I think that is a lot of where like the gender stereotypes come from, is this is your role, this is your role. And there has to be agreement among both people in a partnership that no, that is not your role or your role. It is our role together. And that's how we come up with whatever it looks like for us to be equitable.
And I would even argue that in these traditional, you know, 50s, 60s, you know, generations, that to them, that was equity, right? That was their version of equity because that was the standard back then. So I don't think that like we were to talk to your mom. I guess it's a question for you. Do you think if we were to talk to your mom about her and your dad's breakdown in the 60s, or the 50s, that your mom would feel like they had an inequitable household?
No, not at all. But yeah. I think that if we tried to sit down and explain to them how we approach our family dynamic and try to create equity, they'd look at us like we have three heads.
I think you're right. I think that that's a big challenge for, we can get into that soon, but a big challenge for corporate companies that are led by men in their 60s and 70s and whatever else, about what their versions of equity are versus what our versions of equity are in our families.
It's funny, equity to me, there's a banger, I think, like money first, but in a relationship status, it's more about time.
Yeah.
Because that time is the one thing you can never get back. And my mother, at the time when my dad started the business, she actually took out her 401k funds to go open a daycare and was declined. Right. She was not approved for a business loan. So they pivoted based on my dad's experience. They were going to buy his grocery store with her funds.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting.
Mm, and so now, I did not know that.
Now he's semi-retired. He hasn't really done much for because he owns the business outright, the building free and clear. Everything is now, you know, he's done very well for a man from Mexico without any kind of education. I mean, he got a GED here just because he had to. And so, but when I talk to my mother about this, because we have a very open communication level where I actually rely on her and her advice a lot in life about how to navigate certain things, because she always reminds me about this story when it comes to Mary's and I's work schedule, because we have very conflicting schedules. Like, we are always asking each other and communicating. Without that communication, it doesn't matter how much money we're making, we'll fall apart.
Right.
Because the time is what really is, you know, a hindrance on I think, what your aspirations and your partners is. And your kids, too, because you can't, to your point, if I know I'm burning it at both ends, I can't expect to be a really good dad either and be right. present with them.
Well, I think some people in the modern world, because the time constraints are there, I think instead of sometimes looking to each other, they look externally. So if, you know, maybe it's a more well-off family, that means like a nanny or someone else to take over, or let's max out the after-school programs and whatever you're going to do. I think it somewhat cheapens the experience, because then you're not getting the time as the adult. You're just kind of like spreading it around. Because what I think is interesting, not necessarily back to like our parents' generation, but just like even longer back, you know, kids were raised by communities, right? Mm-hmm. So there's like a lot of people helping out. And one of the negatives of this modern, like very free world is like, you're kind of on your own. And you can like self-select into all these things, but then who's going to drive and coordinate and do all that to make it happen? So to me, like, you almost kind of either like have to go that route, or you have to sacrifice, you know, between the two of you together to, I'm not saying have a more traditional environment, but to be able to keep it within the nucleus. Because I think today's world is like, well, you know, corporate world and in our like very capitalistic environment, we try to solve these problems with more goods and services. And trust me, like I work for a tech startup, like I'm all about that. But I think when it comes to family, like, yeah, you have to sacrifice to get that time back. You can't buy it.
Right.
You have to.
Well, this is why in this, it's such an American thing, honestly, where it's like, oh, well, my kids are involved in 10 activities. And now that my daughter is of age where she can be doing more activities, I have to stop myself and be like, no, am I doing this for her? Or am I doing this because I don't know what to do with her? Mm. And I'm avoiding actually engaging. That's what I'm hearing from you is like parents, instead of actually engaging with their kids in modern, they're hiring it out or putting them in another club or putting them in another, you know? So I catch myself. I'm like, okay, she doesn't need to be in 6 things. She can be in 2 things and that's enough. And I need to just paint with her and I need to just be with her. And I think that's really interesting.
Or sometimes just let the kids be on their own.
Yes. Because
I think I know, Nate, you kind of scoffed at the like engaged sport from fatherhood. But I think parenting in general is much more engaged than it used to be in past generations. Like if you think about, I mean, I know with my parents, it was like, okay, go outside and come back when the streetlights come on.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I know we live in a big city and I did not grow up in a big city. I grew up in a suburb. But still, I think very few parents today would be like, yeah, I'm okay with my, 7-year-old going outside and coming back with the streetlights come on. I mean, we feel like we need to orchestrate and plan and have someone available and have a parent all the time kind of monitoring all of that.
Yeah.
And so like, if we are, yeah, you better believe it takes both parents to do that. It can't just be one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think some of the best times kids have is when there's no set plan. There's no structure. Cause otherwise it's like, go do this, go do this, go do this, this play date, this thing. Even on the weekends, we stack it up. Right. So then you go to these places and these kids are just like tired or angry or whatever. It's like, I'm not trying to tell anyone how to parent. Right. And our kids also have those problems, but I just find that we pack too many things in there and it just,
and then we're like, why are they having a tantrum? I don't understand. And then you like look at the schedule and you're like, I'm tired and ready to have a tantrum and I'm an adult that has regulation skills.
Yeah. So I'm going to continue to kind of blow this out because we really started with, your experiences with your fathers and how that impacted you. And we, zoomed out a little bit to what do you think about parenthood as the amount of time that dads are spending today and the expectations around that. But I'm curious to blow that out even further and say, how do you feel that fathers are viewed in society today? And I mean that within like the structures of support that are available, because I think as a society, there's still sort of that traditional view, right, of fathers being the main breadwinner and paternity leave is very few and far between if anyone has it, versus I feel like expectations within like individual family units and kind of the tension that creates. So, I mean, from your experience, what do you think how do you think society views fatherhood today?
I think I'm a diverse range of friends culturally. And I think fatherhood, it's interesting how I knew these men before they had kids, now after they have kids, and really the diversity amongst them. I think there's a lot of differences in how quote-unquote, their societal pressures are on themselves. So when I talk to my Asian buddies, a lot of it is focused on the, like, it's very pressure from the family at large. Me personally, in my culture, I know that my sisters think that I'm way too involved, that I do way too much. I go above and beyond. I'm setting the bar too high for everyone else because they're very old school and still in the men don't necessarily have to change
when
the diapers, when I come in and I can have dinner ready. And I know that always calls on Mary's back. She's all like, yeah, which I like to play whenever I want to push her buttons. I really play that.
You're like, but I know what I do.
So I think, because I'm not an internet person, I'm not any social real, social media, but I do know that when I talk to my friends, it's funny because to your point earlier with the stats, I'm a girl dad and I do a lot of the routine stuff, but I'm very involved in terms of when I did the dance recital a couple days ago, like there's a little group of dads now that we all show up for each other. And I'm like, I can count on one hand how many times my parents, half of it is because Again, my dad's very old school. This is going to be a very real conversation. So my dad, I remember telling him I was in wrestling. He's like, "So you're gay now?" I was like, "No, Dad, I'm not gay." He's like, "You're wrestling? That's gay."
Thank God.
So, but the funny part, though, is he's still wet, right? And he was one of very few dads who went. You know, again, like, I grew up on the South Side. So, like, my Black friends, my Mexican friends, we had a couple Asian friends. Like, there wasn't a lot of dads in the stands, like, ever. And so, no matter the sport. And so now seeing dads become, you know, going to Girl Scouts meetings, it's fun to be able to have new friends through that shared commonality.
Yeah, a couple of things I'll say. So one is, like, agree with what you're saying. Like, kids going to Bateman now, and there's, like, a Bateman Fathers Club. And it's, like, not expected that you'll join, but, like, it's almost expected that, like, there's an organization that the dads are going to partake. And, and so I think that's good. All the stuff we're saying is good. I think one thing, maybe because I just saw Barbie and this is, like, top of mind, is, like, I feel like while this expectation has shifted to the co-parenting and we're talking about it, I think because either it's newer or men aren't as comfortable sharing their emotions or feelings, there's less of, like, this is hard out there in the in the world about being a dad. Whereas Barbie will show us that there's plenty of people talking about the troubles and the strife of being a mom and complexities of that, right? And I'm not saying, like, I think that's bad necessarily. I think it's maybe that just makes the norm that maybe I shouldn't speak up. Maybe I'll seem weak if I say, you know, this is too hard. And I think some dads, you know, have no problem complaining about their kids, but I think it comes from this, like, machismo, like, oh my gosh, what pain in the ass these kids are, versus, like, what are you really saying behind that? You're struggling. I'm, you know, having self-esteem problems, whatever. Like, that is not quite the norm yet. And right. I think that's not necessarily, like, the society's problem. I think it's just, like, somewhat of a gender thing that, like, what if there was a sequel to Barbie and Ken was having, you know, some of these feelings?
Well, and that's kind of what I love about the Barbie movie, not to, like, hashtag spoiler alerts, but, like, I love at
the
end.
By the time this comes out, that will be way. So
well, I hope so. But I think that, like, what I love about the end is that Ken really, it really is like, Ken, you have to find who you are.
Yes.
Like, don't be not, like, how do you, not to attach it to me, go be who you are without me.
Yes.
But I think that is so true, especially within Lake Village and our community here, that our dads connect with each other and have real conversations. Because often I find that when men get together, it's like, very, like you said, it's like very surface level. I'm always like, Nate, what do you talk about with your friends? And he's like, I don't know. Like, just like,
I asked Ryan the same thing after he comes back from his guys' dinner. I'm like, what'd you guys talk about? Well, they were talking about golf and, like, right, the next
football,
fantasy
football. Like, yeah. Like,
but, you know, okay. If you get together with a group of fathers, it is a little bit of a different dynamic.
Interesting.
You know, I think that, you know, we don't come home and tell our wives about it. We talk about our families and we talk about our kids and whether or not it's complaining or maybe diving in a little deeper about some emotions. We do it, I promise, sometimes.
Good.
You know, it's hard, though, because there's so many other men in my lives that are not fathers. And they don't get it. They have no idea. And so, like, there's that societal pressure for sure, where it's just like, I can't go talk to my buddy that's not a father about being a father. He doesn't care. He doesn't get it. He has no idea what I'm up against or what I'm talking about. So, you know, in 5 years of being a father, I've definitely developed deeper relationships with guys that I probably wouldn't maybe have been friends with before. And, you know, it's awesome. It's a great support system. It's a great place to be and to be surrounded with people that get it and are in the same shoes as you.
And then that emotional support, it's funny because soccer season's coming up, coach for Shay's team, and soccer coach and I have been together now for 3 years, and we were texting each other about what happened with the collapse of the women's national team in the World Cup. It's really interesting because as fathers now, we're like, really diving into the emotional state of mind of those women and, like, how their emotions and egos were getting the best of them. And, like, that emotional talk that you're talking about, like, I know I can't talk about my daughters or women's soccer to 80% of the men that I know.
maybe 90, 95. And I'd lose their interest in the first 2 seconds of saying women's soccer.
and a lot of it happens at work.
Yeah.
And you know, you were kind of mentioning like the parental leave and whatever else, you know, there's a lot of ground to be made up, I think, on that front.
Yeah.
I attended your session there on fatherhood and parental leave for all parents, not just mothers, basically.
Yeah.
And after that, we did implement a new policy. We have a new dad.
Nice.
And we gave him 6 weeks off with full pay.
Woo-hoo!
And 4 weeks work from home following that. So, you know, it's not like 12 weeks paid, but it's a step in the right direction, I think. And, you know, what we can afford is a small business. So, you know, but it's hard because you have to have these hard conversations. I think one thing that made that easy to implement was that the three owners of my company are all fathers.
Well, and I think you're segueing into some of the questions that I have just about corporate responsibility to some of this. And like, again, I'm so curious. We talk about this a lot, George, because obviously you work for a bank and the traditional nature of what that brings to the table, right? Mm-hmm. And people that have been working at the same place for a really long time, and again, that are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and what their expectations are for their male workforce and how that butts up against what the realities are for modern fathers. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, banking is a conservative industry by nature. You know, it's regulatory. And then to your point about old 67-year-old men, they're abundant.
Usually white.
They're abundant and well. You will find them. If that's your target demographic, you will find a lot of those. You know, it's funny because like some of it is ingrained. Like, do I find after working in this industry for over 15 years, I know I used to quit every 2 years, be like, I'm out of here. You guys don't get me. I'm you. And very recently, I've been with the same company now for 6 years. And I've come to find that same patience that I find with my dad as when I wear my professional hat. I'm like, oh, wait, they're 60. They have no concept of what I'm going through right now. And in their head, 2 weeks vacation, 2 weeks time off after you've had a kid. Why do you even want 2 weeks off?
Right. what would you be doing?
So when you start there, you know, it's very cringy on the surface. You're like, oh, this is probably not the best conversations. But then when you start to understand where they come from, and as men, again, I'm very used to men being very unavailable emotionally, professionally. Like, I've never had a male manager that I've been able to have a connection with on a personal level. It's usually very business oriented. It's never very deeper than that. I've had the pleasure of working with some phenomenal women professionally in my life, which very small windows. One of my best friends, she's in San Francisco still. I remember that it was right when Shay was about to be born, and I was debating whether I was going to stay with this company or not. And she pulled me aside and she really gave me one of the best pieces of advice, family first. And, you know, just the whole speech and everything that came along with it was very impactful for me. Very, like, without that, I don't think that I would have gone through the first child motions prepared enough to really absorb it. I think I would have gone through the process of trying to get back to making money, back to what I do, leaving the parenting to someone else who's better equipped than I am.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So Nate, you own a small business, right? So you're talking about like the impact of what making those decisions are. George, you're talking about the event. He's like, I'm getting another beer. No judgment in this. He's like, and George, you're talking about the impact of really working in a corporate environment or traditional corporate environment and what that feels like. Yeah. I'm interested to talk to Ryan and see, you're in a startup environment and an entrepreneur, like, but you're not the owner.
We picked these three men that are having such different experiences.
So crazy.
They're the three closest guys you could have got.
Really?
It's hard for me to comment because it's like just looking at what startups are at the time of like, it's usually a very young group You're moving very fast. It's a small team. So most people aren't even necessarily even at this point in their life. Like, for example, at my company, I'm now the second oldest person at the company of like almost 100 people. And the average age
is not that old, everyone.
Below 40. The average age is probably 25, 26. And most of them, you know, are single. So I think that's like a whole separate issue from nothing to do with this. So I had very little bit paternity either time. But I think in general, what we're saying here, though, is like, as the society has shifted, I think corporate world always lags, you know, modern affairs because they're like conservative and you kind of need people to sadly like turn over and retire, honestly, for these things to change. Like, at a much longer view, I feel like, you know, the societies move forward when it's like, you know, new people in charge. Sadly, like that's, you kind of have to just wait a little bit for that to happen, honestly. And, you know, startups, maybe that's going to happen. I do think, you know, in the tech world in general, probably one of the better industries to adopt a lot of new modern policies. If you get to be post-startup and you're, you know, well-funded, I think it's a great, you know, you'll see some of the better paternity and maternity benefits. So I think that's a general good, but I definitely did not get that because I was at a startup, but that's a whole different risk reward calculation that we had to talk about that. Cause yeah. I basically like, yes, I'm going to go into a bunker for about 2 years and we're going to have to be okay with that. And like, I joked about it. Like it was having a third kid was the startup. It cries all the time. It needs me in the middle of the night. Like, I'm not even kidding you. 2020 was like, I had two new kids. So yeah, it's tough. And like, but there were women there too. And you know, one of my director reports today, like she's had two kids and she did some of that through it, but it requires some sacrifice for sure. I think I had 2 weeks for both kids. But in general, I also have great flexibility in other ways. So now I'm working from home all the time. I set my own schedule. So maybe less great out of the gate, but in this marathon that is parenting, it's actually been amazing. I feel like even a joke now in the next few weeks, like Jess is having way more fun traveling for work than I am, and she owns her own business. So yeah. It goes both ways.
I really think it's interesting. Something that I've gathered from here is, you know, at the very beginning of this, talked about feminism and trying to help women catch up to equity in the workplace. And I think at the same time, there needs to be more people helping men catch up with equity in parenting and the system and the supports and everything that supports that. And one thing that I immediately thought of as we were talking about this is now the Father's Caucus in Congress, where there are congressmen who are our age, our generation, who have young children. And it's dads who are baby wearing on the floor of the Senate. I love that. And setting that example and starting a Father's Caucus to, you know, forward family-friendly policies within the government, and that it's not just moms and women anymore who are saying, hey, we're the family-friendly side, right? But like dads getting involved with that and really modeling that at the same time. So as we wrap this up, because we're running out of time for today, I would love to go to each one of you with my final question is saying, what support do you wish either you had or that new dads coming after you had out there to help them in their fatherhood journey?
And I'm going to add on. So supports that you wish you had. And then if there's a new dad listening to this, because that's our hope, right, is that dads actually get to listen to this. What if you could leave them with their own little nugget, right? Your own little piece of advice for a new dad of where they can find whatever it is that they need, what would that be? No pressure.
I definitely think that dads asking other dads dad-related questions, don't gloss over the little stuff. Get into the details. Because anytime my daughter's 7 and 2, and everybody that I meet who has older daughters just like, oh, get ready for fun. It's like, okay, what do you mean by that?
You're like, no, I need to
know. Like, I have sisters, but what do you know that I don't know? Because I only know from the eyes of a brother, not a dad. And so I think that when I talk to people who are new dads, and I try to be as that tightrope to your point, not to gloss over and say, oh, this is going to be perfect. This is going to be the best thing that ever. I try to be real and be like, this is a lot of what you just decided not to have a life anymore that was like that life before. And so I think for me, I look for, you know, if I was to ask for one thing, is that it'd be fun if there was like a group for girl dads, especially because I know that the teenage years or what everybody tells me I got to be ready for. Maybe give me like a starter course.
I have like three required films for all
there you go.
Dads, actually.
See?
There you go.
See?
We'll talk afterwards.
Good.
Maybe we'll post it in the comments. Three required films for all girl dads.
There you go. Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I think like what would like the one thing I would need or want? I think like, maybe it's just me speaking, but I feel like women, when they have kids, I think it's just more ways to connect with other moms. It's like you got the prepartum class, the postpartum class, you got this resource. And I think a lot of that now does exist for dads because, again, everything is becoming more equal. But I think it's either harder to find or not something that I originally thought I needed. I'm usually a pretty independent, self-starting, like, yeah, I got this kind of person. But I think parenting is one of those things, like, yeah, I can like talk to Jess about it, but sometimes you want to talk to dads about it. And I would say my circle, not a lot of the guys that I'm close with, even if they are dads, go there. So then it's like, okay, well then where can you go find that? And I'm getting there now, but I have a 5 and a 3-year-old. I think maybe it would have been helpful earlier, but then it's also like the COVID years. So I don't know. It's a weird situation.
No, I don't think it was out there, Ryan. You're like, yeah. Like, you're like, maybe it was out there. I'm like, no, it's definitely not out there.
I mean, I actually looked at one point because I know something that a lot of moms rely on are Facebook groups for moms.
Yeah.
And I looked it up at one point. There are so many Facebook groups out there for moms with like tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of women on these groups, right?
Yeah.
I found like one Facebook group for Chicago fathers, and it had maybe 200 people a part of it. Like, not even remotely close to the same scope of support there. And I know that social media and that tends towards one gender to another, but it's community support, right? Whatever way you want to look at it, it's community support.
Yeah, and you know, seeing that Bateman's Father Club was a great like an example of
it's for the kids.
Maybe
it's for the kids.
I
love it.
And like, you know, what are we doing? We're doing fancy football. We're going to bar to drink. But the underlying theory is there. So I think just to the new dads listening, like, just lean into that. Don't be like, don't feel like you have to have all the answers. Like, oh, I can't ask for help, or other dads don't want to talk about that. Because obviously, at least three dads here, everyone's being very open about it. So I think that would be my biggest advice. And like, you hear so much, and this is not just for dads, but for all new parents, like you hear so much about how hard it is and all the cringe stories and all that, but it goes both ways, right? It's the absolute hardest thing you've ever done, but also the absolute best. So just like allow yourself to feel all the emotions, and you're not going to regret it is what I would say.
Yeah.
I kind of got to build on yours a little bit. I mean, you have to find that support system for sure. And yeah, it might not be on social media, but you know, I had a great resource and two brothers that had kids before me. So I had, you know, tons of support and places to go there to have a conversation about anything completely openly. Super grateful for that.
Both of us. Yeah.
But you know, even, you know, we did the midwives program for prepartum and at Swedish, and you know, we did the centering classes where we both went and we sat with other couples that were going through the exact same thing. First time parents, no clue what they were getting into. And, you know, they provided a lot of support and a lot of insight for sure. And, you know, nothing can prepare you obviously for what's to come. But, you know, I think trying to grasp onto some of those things really early on is a good place to be for sure. And then beyond that, you know, you got to advocate for yourself as a parent. As a father, advocate for yourself in your friend group, at your workplace, in public, you know, anywhere. Like, you know, the first time you take your screaming baby out to a restaurant or onto an airplane, you know what? I'm a new dad and I'm trying to figure this out. So y'all can look all you want, but you know, here I am and I'm going to do this because I don't, you know, this is what I chose to do. This is what I want to be doing. This is my child. So, you know, just stepping up and taking ownership of that role, I think, is important, and you know, that's all you can do.
I want to thank all three of you for participating in our last two episodes and just being really, truly open and transparent and starting these conversations that I hope others will listen to. Women, you know, obviously is our main audience here, but will invite their partners or send it to new dads that they know, so that really these conversations and this support can get out there to other dads. Because I think that you all identified something really key here, is that really it's community, right? There's a lot that's out there. Fatherhood has changed. The way that society is evolving has changed. But what's really key in supporting all parents, and especially fathers here, I think, is the creation of community. So I just want to thank all of you for showing
thank
up
you guys.
Here with us today.
And, cheers.
Cheers.
I was going to say, we got it.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers to that, you know. I'm like, wait, somewhere.
All right. So that was our conversation with our dads. Jess, what are some of the things that you got from that conversation?
You know, I think the biggest takeaway for me is that I actually have a lot of hope for the next generation. I think the biggest thing that I took away is that the fathers that we see today are so much more involved, are leaning in so much more. And I think that you will really begin to see the payoff for that in the future generation of children that they're raising. I mean, I can say for myself, being a boy mom, I think the boys that we are raising today are going to see a different role for themselves within the family structure.
Wow.
And that really gives me a lot of hope to, I mean, we talk about career here, right? And motherhood and working motherhood. And I think what this will eventually trickle down to is cultures within workplaces.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that even now, even within, honestly, just within the last 5 years, the way that Nate goes to work with Vivi is different. It's different. He talks about that. He talks about giving those opportunities to his staff and recognizing that it has to be different. It cannot be the same. So we try to close this podcast down with what do we call it, Jess?
It's the in-between part. You know, we are the tightrope, career, motherhood, and everything in between. And so this is the recognition of there's more to you than just career and motherhood.
Are we sure? I don't know. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm sure.
What's your in-between this week?
You know, my in-between for this week, and I think long-term, is I'm beginning to learn Portuguese. Because a little heads up for our listeners, I'm actually taking the summer with my family to go spend 6 weeks in Portugal. And so I'd like to be able to talk to people there. So I'm learning Portuguese.
That's awesome. Are you using an app? Or?
I am. I'm not getting paid to say this, but yes, Duolingo. Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, I don't think I can beat Portugal, so I guess I'll just say we'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you all so much for joining us today on The Tightrope. We know you really are juggling 1,000 things, and it means a lot to us that you listen in. If you liked this episode, make sure you follow and subscribe to us on your favorite streaming networks. And of course, if you know a mom that needs to hear this, or a dad, or anybody else, share us.
And you tend to hear moms saying, where is my village? Like, where is my support? Where is my help? And I think it's a really interesting response to that proverb, because if you go back to its roots, it's an African proverb. And actually, what it is saying is not that we need to help moms or that we need to help parents, but that collectively, it is actually the responsibility of the village, of the community, to raise a child.
That's next week. So until then, just put one foot in front of the other. Thanks, guys.